Adversity? Bring it. The struggle? I welcome it. Snooze on life? Never that. I am Dave Regina, and this is the No Snooze Podcast. Come on. Welcome back, No Snooze Podcast, episode 165. As always, I'm in the booth with a new three. We have Butch, Mr. America, Nieves, Claudio, the voice, Valenzuela, and I am Dave, the body, Regina. At the early age of two, Butch was diagnosed with asthma. For years, the slightest physical exertion could bring on a life-threatening asthma attack. With the loving support of his family and a deliberate and measured plan in place, Butch embarked upon a journey that would not only keep him healthy and strong, but would add excitement and achievement. That journey was fitness and bodybuilding. When Butch started, he was 153 pounds. At 5'8", Butch's best competition weight was 230 pounds at approximately 3% body fat. Butch has won Mr. America, Mr. USA, and the American National Bodybuilding Championships. He also placed in the top four at the Mr. Universe and the World Championships. Butch has also won many powerlifting events, including the East Coast Powerlifting Championship. Butch has been a guest on TV shows, including Good Morning America, New York One, ESPN, Late Night with David Letterman, and Boricua Fitness. He has been a featured guest of the Puerto Rican Day Parade, as well as many cable fitness shows and dozens of fitness and bodybuilding magazines. I know personally, though, the No Snooze Podcast is about to be your favorite interview. Butch, welcome to the podcast, brother.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you. I got to say, I mean, that without a doubt is the most recent, you know, welcoming to a podcast. And that was really well explained and read. That was pretty cool.
Well, thank you, Butch, but I did not write that.
It sure sounded like you did. Yeah. You know?
I stole that. And, you know, we have a lot of minions that run around and get the information for us. No, yeah. I'm just joking. It's CV and I here.
Oh, but, man.
No, I pulled that information. Very impressive, man. And, you know, 153 pounds actually hit me because when I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease, right, in high school, I was originally like 185, 190 pounds. And my lowest, I dropped down to 153 pounds.
Wow. You're a lot taller than I am as
Yeah.
Well,
so. You know, when I was reading the 5'8", I didn't want to say I'm much taller than Butch, but you know.
That's okay. Hey, listen.
Yeah, man. So first, where did Butch come from? You know, what's your first name?
My first name, pronounced properly, is Hiram. Hiram Nieves. In Spanish, it's pronounced Iram.
Iram.
Iram. You know, so the dialect, it kind of sounds a little bit sweeter that way. But, you know, so my godfather actually named me Hiram. It means the noble one.
The noble.
So, yeah, I don't know how I got that name. I really didn't care for that name. So it kind of caused a little bit of bullying when I was younger in school. You know, the young kids could ridicule you and make fun of those names. And I was always very proud. You had to say my name just properly, you know. Interesting story one time was that my mother had to go to school because I was counted out of school for a week. And she's like, I drop you off in grammar school and you're not there. And I was there. The problem is I would never answer to the teacher because she wouldn't pronounce my name properly. So I would not respond to her.
Oh, wow.
And so she responded to my name. But she said, I tried to tell her, and she kept on calling me Hiram. I said, my name is not Hiram. It's Hiram.
So you just ignored her.
And I just ignored her.
I like that.
You know, I just ignored her. A little stubborn, you know? A little stubborn.
I get that.
But as far as Butch goes, you know, when I was, as they tell me, as I was a baby, I would bounce off the wall and just keep going. And they said I was always kind of tough. So they just started calling me Butch, you know, and that kind of stuck. And then, of course, when I got into bodybuilding, it really stuck, you know, and, yeah, and it went from there. So
wow. So there was something that I read, I guess it was one of the first sentences, but it said, you know, that you were diagnosed with asthma at the age of two. So I have a daughter that's 3 and a half now, and I have a heart attack when she coughs and sneezes. So I'm curious at how your parents back then were able to, I guess, understand what the asthma was and how they gave you confidence to kind of like deal with asthma. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. My mother was one of, had a wonderful childhood, wonderful. So had great parents. My mom was, you know, she used a lot of prayer, number one, you know, and she studied a lot of nutrition back then. She tried to learn as much as she could about nutrition. And try to feed me the best foods that she could, you know, because I was actually born kind of small and weak. And she would just always, you know, feed me, give me special shakes to drink, even back in the 60s, you know, that's a while back. And you know, she kept me really, really healthy. She made sure I exercised at a certain point to try to walk around. She would never let me sit sanitary. And she wouldn't let me play the victim. She was like, get up, do your chores. Get, you know, do what you need to do and keep moving forward. My father, same thing. My father was, you know, he was stern and tough, but with a lot of love, you know. But there were times, you know, when I get hit with an asthma attack. And my father has a great story. You know, he rushed me to the hospital. And he said at one point, he just sat there and he started crying because he saw me choking. And I said, there's no way he's going to survive. And he literally just ran through the security guard into the back room and said, my son's going to die if you don't take care of him now.
Wow. And how old were you then?
You know, I think I was around about 5 or 6 years old.
Wow, that's scary.
You know, so yeah, he said, I literally just bum rushed the security guard at the front of the door and ran in because they said, just take a seat and wait. You know, and he ran in, you know, and thank God he did because I probably wouldn't be
absolutely
here, you know.
I guess as I'm thinking through this, I want to know a moment that you kind of fell in love with weight training, right? For me, I have a very specific story and reason why I fell in love with the weights, right? And this was when I was in high school, and again, I had gotten sick, but I was like now trying to build myself back up, and Crohn's disease, there's no like real reason or answer for it, but it's very heavily stress induced, right? So my goal was to reduce stress. So the way that I would do that was either playing basketball or lifting weights. Now, I had 185 pounds on the bar, which is not a lot of weight, but you know, it
depending on your age, that's
not
bad. Well, it's
at 153 pounds, you know,
that's a lot of weight.
One plate and a 25 on each side, just for people to understand the context of that. And I go to bench press it. My brother, who was, he's 5 years younger than me at the time, this weight falls on my chest. But I had also put the safety clips on the side. So I couldn't roll it off. So now it's on my chest. And I had this one friend who's still a best friend of mine. Shout out to Dritan Gemma, my Albanian brother. He basically comes over and he's like, you will never be bigger than me and you will never be stronger than me. And in that moment, I was struggling with that weight. You know, I had to roll it all the way down my ankles. Like me and my brother, we never forget it. But from that moment, I became obsessed. And my goal at the time was only to get bigger than Dritan. Right. So not only have I done that now, but it's been a habit of mine that like has just stuck with me now forever. Is there a moment that you remember that you're like, wow, like I'm in love with weight training?
Well, I think there's an accumulation of moments, you know. I mean, truth be told, I started weight training because I wanted to look good for the girls, right? And I noticed that I could do that even with my asthma. I could go at a slow level and keep training and go from there. What I did notice is as I got in better shape, as I got in better, I got a little bigger, a little stronger, and my cardio improved, I noticed it helped my asthma a lot, you know? So I remember one day I decided to enter a little local gym contest just to...
How old are you
at this time? At that point, I'm 22, 23, okay. Right around there. You know, it was called the Mr. Palace. And it was a local gym. The gym was called the Palace. So they would, you know, they entered that contest. I entered at 153 pounds when I finally was all said and done. Yep. And I won. And I got a ton of attention from the girls. So I really enjoyed it. I said, wow, this is great.
This is it.
So I kind of used that to get in shape for the summertime. And, you know, and get the attention that I wanted, you know, and get to know people and all that. As I started doing that year by year, I kept winning. You know, I kept on doing pretty well. But eventually, I remember I wanted to compete at a higher level. So I started thinking about competing at the Mr. America. And I went to a couple high-level judges at the time and said, you know, what do you think that I could do to win Mr. America? And they said, don't bother. You're never going to win. You don't have the genetics to win. You don't have the drive. You don't have anything to be able to compete with these guys. And that bothered me. It wasn't that I cared about their opinion, because I never really cared about people's opinion. I never, you know, a lot of people say, you know, motivation is telling me not to do something. That never bothered me. Like, if you told me I couldn't do something, I'd just walk away. It depended on who said it, you know. But at that point, it just, why can't I win? I thought I could win. And I said, you know what? I'm going to win. I'm going to go and I'm going to do the best I can. And I think at that moment, I got really obsessed with training. At that moment, I said, I want to get as big and as strong as I can, as well developed as I can, and I'm going to compete, and I'm going to give this 100% effort and see what happens. You know, and it took, you know, it took 12 years before I could win the Mr. America.
Oh, wow. So that was a 12-year journey from in your 20s till you actually are winning this.
Yeah. That took me 12 years to finally capture that title.
Wow. So and I'm 34. Do you think I have a shot if I start now?
I got to tell you, honestly, with today's,
I said, no,
today's technology, today's nutritional, I think a lot of people could do, you could do wonders, you know? You could do wonders. You could really, you know, could you win? Possibly. Anything is possible. I'm a firm believer is possible.
Butch, let's go, baby.
Let's go, you know? But, you know, it comes depends on your drive and how bad do you really want it?
Yeah.
Most people don't want it bad enough. They say they do.
Right.
And they post about it. You know, they talk about it. They cry about it. But are you in the gym day in and day out when you feel good, when you feel bad, you know, when the weather's terrible, that kind of thing?
Jump forward a little bit. I want to talk about winning in life, right? You're a real life champion. You have multiple accolades and belts, and, you know, the credentials here are incredible. You've been around some extremely high level people, I'm sure, in business as well as the powerlifting and the bodybuilding space. What are the common qualities that you possess as a winner, but then also see in other winners in life?
I think the biggest quality that I, you know, even in business, you know, like, you know, we went through COVID and that was a really bad time. A lot of my friends closed down their businesses. And they want to know, how did you survive? You know, what did you do? And I just said, I didn't quit. I didn't give up. You know, there were some bad days. There were some bleak days, even in bodybuilding. I had some injuries. You know, you get sick. There's times you can't get to the gym. And, you know, there's things that happen. But I never let it deter me from continuing and trying my best, whatever that best was.
Right.
It didn't, you know, I didn't feel like I had to go to the gym and train 100% every time. I just made sure I went to the gym and did best for that particular day. So there's some workouts that were incredible. Some workouts that weren't so great, but I got it done. I did the best that I could. And I just kept chipping away and kept chipping away. And I think that's the success, is getting up every day and going towards your goal and doing the best you can for that day. But an honest, you know, like not saying, okay, this is the best I could do and I'll walk away and then you go watch video games. No, I went there and I gave my best effort or whatever I can do and then continued from there. And I didn't let anything deter me. You know, I've had injuries like everyone else during the way, during the course of my career. And some injuries were tough. You had to go through surgeries and all that. But I did, I did what I could every single workout.
That's good. That's good to hear.
I worked. In fact, I remember training for the Mr. USA. I had broken my hand, you know, so people were like, well, now you can't compete for the Mr.
You
USA,
punch, Butch?
You know,
no, absolutely.
Because, you know, I didn't want to punch someone else. So you know how that goes. So I punched a wall. I broke my hand. And now, you know, they said, you know, there's no way you're going to train for the Mr. USA. And I found a way. You know, I was doing shrug raises in a calf machine. You know, I put on my shoulders, you know.
Now they actually have those machines.
Right.
You probably invented them.
You know, right. So we did all these different things to be able to work out, to be able to get the job done, you know.
Yeah. Just want to unpack that a little bit because it's good to hear. It sounds typical to never give up and then to give your, you know, like best effort for that day. But something that I even preach in business to my team is, you know, you showing up and providing 100% every day is not realistic. But you showing up, even if you're feeling at that 68%, but then giving that full 100% of 68%, that's where winning, I think, really happens. And
Absolutely.
People, when they see that, there's a certain level of respect that they end up having for you as well. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I mean, a lot of people feel like, you know, this is a happy journey, right? You're excited. You're motivated. You're not always going to be happy.
Right.
Not every single day. Other things happen in your life. You know, you have, you know, problems at home. You have problems at work, you know, and all that affects your workouts. That all affects what you're going to do. But, you know, you try to put that to the side and you give your best effort moving forward.
Right.
And sometimes those workouts aren't the best. You're not happy doing those workouts. And straining. I remember I used to train so hard. I used to bleed through my skin. I used to break capillaries through my skin. Capillaries are my eyeballs. I would train so hard. Yeah.
Wow. So
I would keep pushing. So if you're not bleeding. He also, I don't know if I want to compete.
I was on the leg press today and I had like 5 plates on each side, not crazy weight at all. And I was repping that out. But then I got like a little winded. I said, you know what? Let me do a couple more reps. But then I thought to myself, because I was holding my breath in and I should have been like breathing out.
Yeah.
But I felt like I was going to pop a blood vessel. So you think that if I kept going, I might have started bleeding through my face?
It all comes down to what your goals are. You know, my goal.
I'm on camera all the time, which I already got a crooked nose over here. I got to look good. You know?
Got to look pretty. Absolutely. Not me. I'm listening. I'm ugly.
I've
gone with that. So, but my goal was to win. And what, you know, bodybuilding competition, this is the truth. Most competitions, it's not healthy. Not healthy for your body.
I was going to ask you that, actually.
Not healthy. A lot of people think that, you know, the whole aspect, the theory behind bodybuilding, eat clean and train every day. But when you're competing, you know, we're competing against each other. I want to outdo you. So if you do 10, I'm doing 12. You train 4 days, I'm training 5. You train 2 hours, I'm training 3. You know, I'm going to try to outdo you with every turn that I can. I'm going to try to outsmart you with the nutrition. I'm going to try to, you know, get as much recovery as I can. I'll go back into the gym and do it again. I want to win. Now, sometimes winning isn't really that healthy because you're breaking your body down to a point where it can't recover. And I've done that. I've gone past that point, you know, that pain zone. Look at some of the greatest bodybuilders. Say, look at Ronnie Coleman. He's on crutches. Yeah. I mean, look at the guy. And he says it was all worth it. So that's something individual that everyone has to go through. I'm asked often, you know, was it worth it? Because I have knee replacements, I have lower back surgery, I have pins in my shoulders, you know, and there's some days I say yes. Some days I say, oh, not today.
Right, not today.
Not
hurting.
Today ain't worth it. Yeah. You know what I mean? So for everybody, it's an individual thing, you know? So, and as you train, which I think a lot of people today should do, is have a distinctive goal. Like, what are you training for today? Are we, you know, today, for this week, for this month, are you doing a period of training? Are you training, you know, to lose a little weight? Are you training to get a little stronger? Are you training to put on some size? You know, all these things will dictate how your routine should be. You know, most people just go in there and they just kind of like, they see a sea of equipment, they wander around, they hit this, they hit that. And that's why they're not getting great results. You know, you should be really, really zoned in and point, okay, these are my goals. This is my time frame. This is what I want to accomplish. Now you can set up a routine and find somebody who could help you with that. Or, you know, learn yourself. I learned a lot by myself.
I guess with Ronnie Coleman and like, well, Arnold's still in really good shape and so Sly and like those guys still look incredible and they're in their 70s, right?
Yeah, but also their job is to look great and you know they
got a lot of money to do
it. Got a lot of money to do it. Anywhere Arnold goes, a gym goes with them.
Right. Well, I wasn't going to, listen, you take this how you want it, but I'm giving you a big compliment here. I think you look phenomenal. How old are you now?
I'm 62.
You're 62 years old. So you look great, right?
I appreciate that.
But you've also trained extremely hard and unsafe for a long time, right?
Well said. Absolutely.
But like, you know, when you think of like the Ronnie Colemans and stuff, and yeah, you see, it's kind of sad because you see these guys, some of them in wheelchairs and, you know, crutches and all that. What do you think allowed you, like, how are you still able to, you know, coach people up and lead these boot camps that you lead that we'll talk about later on? But like, what's the difference there?
You know, I think part of it is just your lifestyle, how far you take it, you know? I mean, like, you know, there's a couple of videos of Ronnie squatting 800 pounds, right? I used to squat in the sevens. You know, now he was a 300-pound man, you know, at my best, I was around 240, 250 when I was training off-season, you know, and my best squat was 705.
Jesus.
So that put a lot of pressure on
me. Why don't you?
You know, so, yeah, you know, the one luck that I used to have is I remember when I started kind of getting serious with the weight training, I hooked up with this guy named Nat Cervino. And at the time, you know, I nicknamed him Pound Cake. Big Italian guy, red hair, you know.
So nickname.
I used to call him Pound Cake, you know. And the reason was because we would eat a whole Entenmann's cake and a pot of coffee before we would train. That was our pre-workout.
Why is that?
Why not? Why not? I didn't say we were smart.
Claudio's in love with this.
He likes this routine.
He's like, I could do this.
I like this routine. But I didn't know, to me, was that he was also a top 10 in the country in powerlifting. I had no idea.
So top 10 guys are eating pound cakes?
That's what he was. He was a 300-pound guy. He wanted to keep his weight up, yep. But that's what we would have. The rest of the day, we eat pretty clean, but that was our pre-workout.
I like that.
That was our pre-workout. That was the off-season, and he was a powerlifter, and yep. He wanted to bounce off his belly when he squatted and all that kind of stuff. And him, too, he squatted well into the 800s.
Jesus.
You know, I mean, so I started training with him, and, you know, I was always trying to keep up with him, and I always felt so weak keeping up with him. So here I'm, you know, repping out 600, 700, you know, and he's like, ah, you're a pussy. And I'm like, oh my goodness. You know what I mean? So that's how I kind of felt. And I remember when I would start to train with other people, I'm like, man, why is everybody so weak? You know,
because
I
trained
and he would bring in his partners and yeah. They were squatting. This one guy named Joe Morelli was squatting 900. Jesus. I think he did nine. I think his best squat was 915.
The bars carry that?
The bars bend. And we had 100-pound plates, I remember. We would use 100-pound plates. I had a gym called Iron Kingdom.
Wow.
And we had a ton of 100-pound plates. And the bar would, you know, come up and down. And
I bet you those plates are still in the exact same spot right now. Because nobody's moving that stuff out.
I sold them. They were a hot item. Everybody was fighting for them.
Wow. That's crazy.
But yeah, you know, it was like you said, who you surrounded yourself with. You know, I was lucky. I got jumped in with these guys and I started training with them. So I was always pretty thick and really strong. And I had that powerlifting background, which really made the muscle look deep, thick, and deep. You know,
yeah, we'll throw up some pictures. CV will pull some photos of you back in the day, and we'll attach those to the episode. This episode is brought to you by Hudson Valley Teeth Whitening. Hudson Valley Teeth Whitening is an experienced teeth whitening salon where you can get up to 7 shades lighter with just a 60 or 90 minute session in a professional and relaxing setting. They offer the most superior product coupled with the highest quality of customer service available to get you instant results. Whether you have an important event to attend, such as a wedding, birthday, anniversary, interview, or you are just unhappy with the color of your teeth, this LED light technology helps whiten your teeth fast and easy. At Hudson Valley Teeth Whitening, they understand how important your smile is to you. And speaking from personal experience, you'll be guided by highly efficient staff in a relaxing environment to reach your desired shade. Let them know you're a friend of Dave's from the No Snooze podcast and connect with them at HudsonValleyTeethWhitening.com or on Instagram at HVTeethWhitening. Now, back to the epi. I want to talk to you a little bit about business. So there's a concept that I think we, just as a society, we overthink at times, right? And basically what that concept is if you're confused about what to do in business, right, you could basically look at the top 3 things that you're really good at, right? And instead, like your story sounds very simple to me. You were a bodybuilder. You loved health and wellness. And now you decided to monetize off of it. I don't know why more of us don't do that, right? Like why we... It's not like you were working construction and you were building this construction business, you know, now after you've had all this experience, right? So why don't more people do that? Like, why don't we highlight, I guess, our strengths and then try to monetize on that? Any idea?
I think it's just, you know, a lot of people just don't have the, you know, the internal fortitude to do something like that. They're a little bit afraid and they don't have the consequences. And they have everybody around them telling them, don't do that. Be safe. Get your 9-to-5. Go work for the city. You know, do all these jobs that are, you know, which, you know, all those jobs are good.
Yep.
And you could become very successful doing those jobs, you know. And being your own boss is not, you know, all cracked up to be and having your own business. You think, oh, you can make your own hours. No, you can't. Right. You're working 24/7, 7 days a week. And you're working for people. So you have to get the job done. There's times I'm at 10 o'clock at night, I'm at the gym, you know, getting things done. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I'm up at 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, working on the computer to get the new programs out, you know? Yep. So it's not as glamorous as people think, but I am doing it for myself.
Right.
You know, so it gives me a little bit more incentive. So I think some people are bred to be born entrepreneurs. And other people are not. They want a little bit more guidance. They want a little more structure and a little more safety. Mm-hmm. Even though to me, you know, getting a city job or a 9-to-5, you know, is not a safe process, because at any point they could just say, hey, we're having cuts and that's it, you're out, you know, and same mm-hmm. thing with the business, you know. But I just like the fact that I know, okay, you know what, this month we're not doing so good. We could, you know, let's bump up the process here. Yep. Let me put us in new programs. Let me do this. I have that choice. I have that option. Mm-hmm. You know, I work for LA. I don't know if I could say that, but I work for LA Fitness for a while, mm-hmm. You know, so I used to, I help build their personal training.
Any clause against LA?
No, nothing like that. But you know, you never want shout out people. You know?
Yeah.
But one thing I really didn't like in the chain of command, you know, I was taking care of their personal training departments, was the fact that I had to go through so many steps to get something approved. Like a client would come to me and say, hey, you know what? I lost a session here. I want to train with this person. I want to do that. Can I do that? And I was, okay, now I have to call the office. They have to call someone else. They got to call. It was like, I couldn't get it done. You know, I pride myself when you join my gym, you're talking to me. We're going to get it done. We're going to resolve it. I'm going to get you in the best shape of your life. I guarantee it, mm-hmm. you know? And that's one thing that my studios do, is that we do guarantee getting you in shape. You know,
if you commit,
right. You know, listen, yeah. If you're not happy with our services, money back.
Yeah.
Money back. That's my promise to you. Mm-hmm. If you come in, you know, and you're not happy with what we're doing or something, you kind of felt like, you know, this is not for me. Yeah. Here's your money back. No harm, mm-hmm. you know? So,
when did you, I guess, like decide to monetize off of this, right? Was it after you were competing? Was it while you were still competing? People were like, oh, wow, I want to look like Mr. America. Now you're charging for personal training sessions. How did you get into the business in general?
Well, I was a mechanic before I became, you know, an auto mechanic. I worked actually at HO Penn. So I was a forklift mechanic at one point. And, you know, I was in the airport, I remember, at JFK, working on one of these forklifts. And I never forgot, the Concorde came by me. You know, and I was wintertime, was I think February or something like that. And the tools were stuck to my hand. So I had to get into my truck, put my hands up and get the heater on. With that, my boss had called at the time and was screaming at me to get the job done. And I said, this is some kind of bullshit. I said, I'm so tired of this, you know? And I thought about it, you know, what am I really good at? You know? And I said, I was good at training and I was good at helping people, because I always like to help people. Mm-hmm. I said, you know what? I'm going to look into that, you know? And at the time also, you know, I was engaged and I was looking to get married, you know, and that all went to hell at one point. So I had extra money that I was saving for the wedding and for the house and all that. And I saw a local gym that was for sale. And I said, you know what, let me go in there and see what's going on. And I bought it. And that's how it started.
Wow.
And that's how it started. I jumped in and everybody thought I was crazy. My boss even wanted to do a psychological eval. I said, why would you lose the job like this and go on your own? You know, you could lose everything. Mm-hmm. I said, I can gain everything. Mm-hmm. You know, I said, I'm willing to give it a try, mm-hmm. you know, and that's exactly what I did. That's exactly what happened.
It's fire. It's a champion mindset right there.
Yeah.
You did some work with Fit Body Bootcamp, right?
Yeah, so I was.
Bedros Koulian is mm-hmm. is very big and prominent in the health and wellness podcasting space now. How was that? I guess, what'd you learn from him, and then kind of like being on the inside of that Fit Body Bootcamp model? Are there things that you took away to then?
I learned a lot. Pedros is a great guy, number one. And I joined his mastermind group. So I had some, you know,
direct access.
Yeah. And I've talked to Pedros. I mean, I can call Pedros right now if I wanted to, you know. He's a really good guy, really smart, really brilliant, you know, and a good guy. You know, we were the first Fit Body Bootcamp in New York, you know, and we were the first to start like a Groupon deals.
Yep.
And he said, do me a favor, you know, let's start the Groupon. Let's see how, you know, how it develops. And then we could teach everyone else how to do it. And we did that. And it was a great experience. You know, the reason I left at one point was that his model started changing, mm-hmm. you know, and it was more like I, you know, it wasn't a franchise when I bought it. It was a licensee.
Gotcha.
So, and I really enjoyed that. And then he switched to licensing, and now he wanted percentages of everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I remember I told him, I said, you know, I don't know what you guys do in California, but in New York, we don't give our bank information just to anybody. You know what I mean? I'm not going to allow you to come into my bank account and just take percentages out when you feel like it. And that's what it felt like to me, you know? So I said, you know, I think I'm going to try this on my own. And I had my lineage of Mr. America, Mr. USA. I had a long acting relationship, you know, with the community. So I felt like, you know, I had a good shot of just doing this back on my own. And the, originally why I went to Fit Body Boot Camp, because I wanted to soften my name up a little bit. At the beginning, I was associated with hardcore training. And that's not the crowd that I really wanted to work with. I wanted to work with the housewife or the businessman that came in, or the entrepreneur that was struggling with his time and said, how can you get me in shape? That's who I really wanted to work with. That's where my passion was. So, you know, so with that, with Fit Body, it allowed me to do that because it kind of softened my name up a little bit, you know, because everybody, oh, Mr. America, he's going to kill me. Right. He's going to have me squatting. And at the beginning, I did, you know, I was killing everybody, you know. And
then 100-pound plates for breakfast.
Yeah, you're doing curls or you're going to, or I'm going to kill you, you know. You know, I used to tell everybody, no pressure. If you don't do that, I'll kill you. But no pressure, you know. But, you know, as you learn, you mature and you get more tools in your toolbox, so to speak. You know, and we softened our name to the community. It was better. Everybody kind of knew me. And at one point, nobody called the gym Fit Body Boot Camp. Everybody called it Butcher's Place. Oh, that's Butcher's Place. I'm going to go to Butcher's Place. You know, so my first gym was called Butcher's Fitness World. You know, so we played with bringing that name back. Mm-hmm. But I just don't think girls are going to want to write Butch on the shirt. You know what I mean? That kind of thing. So we used the Mr. America title, which I was hesitant to use too, but it worked. It worked pretty well. Mm-hmm. You know, it worked pretty well. We were well known in the community and we went from there and we started doing that. So, but the Fit Body experience was great. I had a great time. I learned a lot. You know, and it really helped me with a network of a lot of good people around me. So that was really strong too. That's the big thing. You got to always build that network. If you're not building that network, you can't do it on your own. Mm-hmm. You think everybody's like, I don't need nobody. You need a whole team. Even when I was competing, people were like, you know, I was always super confident. Some people took it as being arrogant. But I would tell, I said, listen, I have, you know, a great coach. I got great training partners. You know, I have great people around me. Mm-hmm. I don't see how I'm going to lose. I just don't see it. Look at my team. Right. My team behind me was like, they're the shit.
Did you like have a guy like that would like slap you in the back before you like did your squats and stuff?
Well, he wouldn't slap me, but Nat would, my buddy Nat would look at me like, if you don't do this, I'm going to snap your neck. And he could, you know? So I was like, oh man, you know? So, but I had, you know, along the way, I mean, I had a couple great training partners. Yep. They were real passionate. They wanted me to win. Mm-hmm. And they pushed me and it was great. I mean, we had some great training experience. I'll tell you a great story about Nat was, again, when I was training, I think for the Nationals, one of the biggest shows at the time. And, the day before we were talking about, he goes, when's your next show? I said, I think I'm going to do, you know, this show, this date and all that. He said, all right, great. So we'll officially start on Monday. Mm-hmm. You know, today, let's just train and have a good time. He was squatting. He tore his quad.
Oh, right there?
Right there. Tore his quad.
Now, does the quad pop?
Like it sounded like Velcro. Like when you rip Velcro, that's what it sounded like.
Because you know, when you pop the Achilles, that's like a rubber band. Like,
yeah, but that's more with great, the bone and everything, right?
So, I'm thinking of
the quad was like, it sounded like it was, I was like, what the hell was that? And then all of a sudden, he dropped the bar and he ran across the gym. He was hobbling. I was like, what happened? And he tore that. So I was like, oh my goodness, you know? So we rushed him to the hospital, rushed him to the doctor. They were going to do, he said, I don't think it was a complete tear, if I remember right, you know? But they bandaged him up. I mean, he couldn't obviously work out anymore. So.
Were you like, now I'm stronger than you?
Yeah, you know? So, I didn't think of that.
There you go.
I didn't think of that. But I still didn't dare to because he still had his upper body. You know what I mean? So, and he benched in the fives. You know what I mean? So, but I remember 2 weeks later, I'm going into the gym to start my official training for the competition. And there he is sitting there, you know? I'm like, Nat, what are you doing here? And he said to me, he says, what are you talking about? He says, I'm here because you're going to get ready for the Nationals. And I said, yeah. He says, so I'm helping your partner. I'm here. And I'm like, but you can't train. He goes, you never leave your wingman. He says, you never leave your wingman. I'm here to help you train and get you in shape. So he spotted me and he worked out with me the entire time.
Wow.
He became like my spotter and my trainer for the entire time. He would not leave my side. Every time I worked out, he was there with me.
So I'm not a movie guy, But that reference right there, CV is going to be impressed with this, of never leaving your wingman. And shout out to my father, because we always used to watch this movie, Goose and Maverick,
Top Gun.
Yeah. No, it's a great, you like that, CV? Let's go. So they always make fun of me, Butch, because I don't know any movies, man. Like, everyone always makes movie references around here, and I'm like, you know what I mean? I don't know any movies.
But you knew that one.
I knew that one.
That was a big one back in the 90s, right?
Yep. Before we get into your specific locations in the Bronx and then in Westchester, I got to pick your brain on, got to share with us a little bit about some of the have you made bad business moves along the way?
Every day. I still make bad business moves. Every day I'm like, oh shit, that didn't work, you know?
What's the biggest mistake you've made in business?
Wow, that's a big question. I got to say, hiring the wrong people. Mm. I think for me, when I look back, like, I've hired some people that did some serious damage and I didn't fire fast enough. Like, I should have got rid of them. Like, you know, I kept, you know, I'm the ultimate optimist, right? I'll give you chance after chance and I try to help you and figure you want to learn, you want to become better and better. Some people don't. Some people just want to, they so to speak, is step over dollars to make pennies. You know, if I could steal a little bit here, or I could do this over there, or I could rob for myself, they're never part of that team. And I think I had certain people that really did some serious damage to my business, you know, and especially this is a service business, you know. So if you're working for me and you're a trainer and I send you all these clients that has signed up with me and they came in because of me, but now you start bad mouthing me or you start saying, I'm going to do this on the side and I'll give you half the price over there. There's some serious damage. And if you're there long enough, it could really mount up. And I think when I look back, you know, I mean, I've you know, signed the wrong lease. I've, you know, done simple things, like not simple, but I've done things like that. But I think the biggest one was just hiring the wrong person and letting them stay too long.
That's a great lesson, because especially any business in general, the culture, the company culture and the organization, it's not in alignment with the people that are there, they can actually torment the business.
Right.
Kill you.
Right.
That's good. All right, good. Now let's talk about some good things. What's different about your boot camps? And I guess tell us where the two locations are. I said the Bronx and then Westchester, right? And
that's accurate? Hawthorne.
Yeah, in Hawthorne.
New York. Well, I think what's different about our boot camp is, since I also have a jiu-jitsu background.
Mm-hmm. Right? I'm going to get there. Don't go too far. I got questions for you.
But okay, so with that being said, laying that down, you know, we put mats down in my boot camp in the Bronx where we started, right? Mm-hmm. They're 2-inch mats, so they were really easy. And we noticed that, you know, a lot of people have knee problems, back problems, and that became no problem when you're able to work out on those mats constantly. Mm. So it really helped the recovery aspect, you know? And also the fact that, you know, we do a structured workout. So on Monday, you know, every workout is done. We do a HIIT style workout.
Explain what HIIT is for people who may not.
High intensity interval training, right? So we kind of flipped it on its head a little bit. So instead of, like, they do a little bit of rest, you know, a lot rest, I'm sure, and a short amount of time, we do a longer workout, set and a short amount of rest.
Gotcha.
So we'll go 40 seconds and rest for 10 seconds. And then we go from that. So we keep the pace up a little bit. But we have it structured. So the beginning of the workout, every workout has cardio and core. And then we add a little bit of, on Mondays, we work upper body and more strength. Right. But we still have a little bit of cardio and a little bit of core, not too much, you know. On Tuesday, we work the lower body, you know. Again, we focus on strength with a little bit of cardio, a little bit of core. Wednesday is all cardio. And then Thursday, we repeat the process with the upper body, but there's a lot more cardio involved and we go a little bit quicker, you know. And the same thing on Friday, we repeat the process with the lower body, you know. So we're really working the glutes and the hamstrings and the quads and all those things, but we add a little bit more cardio aspect to it. On the weekends, it's a full body workout. So we have a saying that we use in the boot camps, and it's you know, I stole it from someone. You could steal it from me if you haven't heard it already. But exercise is king, nutrition is queen, but recovery rules the court. So we make sure that your workout, you'll get full recovery by the end of the week. You know, and our goal is not, when you come in, my goal is not to crush you. I don't want to get you excessively sore, especially if you just started training.
Yeah.
We want you to just adapt to it little by little. And every week we incrementally raise the bar a little bit, depending on your progress and depending on your goals. I think too often today, you know, trainers always brag, oh, she couldn't walk. I killed her. You know, I don't see no sense in that because you still have a life to lead. You still have to go to work. You might have small children at home. Now you can't even pick them up off the floor. You know, what kind of nonsense is that? So I don't even think that's proper. And I think that's something really bad that the fitness industry needs to turn around to be really, really knowledgeable about, you know, or sensitive about that first person starting again. And we make sure we do that. And we use a lot of weights. We use barbells. We use dumbbells. We use all the toys. We have the battle ropes. We have the stationary bikes, the Echo bikes, which are like designed by Satan.
Killer.
And the rowers. So the workouts are never the same. You always get a variety of workouts. We have good music and the community is fantastic.
That's awesome. And I'm coming to check you out, by the way.
Cool. I'm sure a lot of people will enjoy that. We're going to film that, right? Right, CB? You come and film that, you know?
So I took this from your site and it goes along with what you're saying. The old saying, no pain, no gain, really ends with no brain.
Right.
Here at Mr. America's Personal Training, we believe the person who trains the smartest and with discipline, combined with a little dose of fun, is the one who achieves their fitness goals.
Right.
Right.
You got to be able to laugh at yourself. You got to have some fun at the point. You got to enjoy wanting to go. Mm-hmm. If you wake up and you're totally dreading going to the gym, it's going to be difficult to get you in shape. You know, it's going to be really difficult. You know, a lot we work on is the mindset. You got to have that right mindset.
Now, do you think this style of working out, because there's a lot of people that like it's holiday season now, and whether they're trying to get ready for the new year, which I think is, I hate the concept of like, yeah, I'll start in the new year. Like, no, you should start tomorrow. But if you need a little couple weeks to mentally prepare, so be it. No problem. Do you think your style of boot camp is good for somebody who has not really been able to commit to a process of overall health and wellness? Or is it too aggressive to start?
I mean, it's really individual. You know, it's really individual. I will tell you this, you know, to feed off of that a little bit. If any trainer tells you that they're the end all be all, that their system is the one that works, that their nutrition is the one that works, you got to follow this, they're full of shit. There are so many different modalities out there that you could use to get yourself in shape. So you have to find what you like and what you enjoy and what you're willing to do at the end of the day.
Right.
So we have a great style. To me, it's about longevity. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure that you're going to be able to train, like myself, right into the 60s and 70s.
I'm trying to go 80s, 90s, my brother.
Yeah, absolutely. Why not? Even up to 100, right?
I mean, I will have all the wrinkles on my face, but I am going to be shredded.
Right. But actually, when you don't want to have that many wrinkles. When you make those funny faces in the gym, that helps out with the wrinkles.
Okay,
you
know? Good.
So, I think you have to find our routine, our workout is conducive to a lot of people, to a good majority of the population, but it is not for everyone because you are required to work.
Right.
Some people want to go in and not sweat. Some people want to go in and not move too quickly. Like between rounds, we're like, come on, hustle it, let's go. A little bit of enthusiasm, let's go. You know, we keep you moving, you know. So you got to have that, a little bit of energy to start with. We do offer also beginner classes, a little bit slower, a little bit easier.
Yep.
You know what I mean? But, you know, I'm the first to say it's not for everybody.
Yeah. No, that's a great answer. And I do believe that the word boot camp can be intimidating to people.
Absolutely.
But it's also one of the most welcoming environments in the fitness space because everybody rallies behind you and that community aspect to it, I think, allows people, even who are beginners, to really excel and like try to fight more than they would by themselves. Right. And I think that just as society, like we need people. We're people for lack of a better word. I thought you were turning your phone off, man. That was me or you? I don't know. Probably me. I'm blaming it on you, Butch, but it's absolutely
me. It's okay,
me.
Man. I'm going to double check because you made me feel guilty.
No, it's me, man. It's absolutely me.
Yeah, 100%. I turned my shit off. You know?
100%. I think that's very important, actually. And more people should be, you know, should be joining something like that, but just getting over the initial verbiage of a boot camp, you know?
Yeah, again, it's just a word, you know, like what's the word that's trendy? Like, what do people search? You know, that's what a lot of these names come up with, you know, to see what's popular.
Right.
You know, so people could resonate with that, you know, but group training has a lot of good qualities to it. You know, if you're next to somebody who motivates you, inspires you, you know, that's going to really help you progress your workout and make you feel a little better. It's a well-known, and by the flip side though, if we're working out together, you know, and your energy is low and you're not, your enthusiasm is low, it's going to hurt my workout. It's going to lower my workout 30%. That's a fact.
Really?
That's a known. Yeah. If I'm standing next to you and we're trying to work out together and you're like, oh, the hell with this stuff. I'm tired. I don't want to do this. All of a sudden I could overcome it to a point, but it doesn't matter. Your body's still going to, you know, not work out as best as it can. You want to always be with people who are going to motivate you, inspire you, or at least keep you accountable.
Yes.
Right? Because we're not, at the end of the day, we're not personal trainers. We're accountability experts. What can I do to... That's a bomb, right?
That's fire. if CB was a DJ in the back, he'd have that. Wow, accountability experts. I love that.
Yeah, so we have to find ways. What can I do to make you accountable? So if I get you into a group of people, right? And I reach out to you, Dave, you haven't shown up, but also Johnny and Tommy and Linda and Beth all reach out to you too and say, man, we haven't seen you in class. What's going on? Where have you been? Mm-hmm. You know, we also have a private Facebook group for our boot camps. So people interact in there and say, oh, there's a special in chicken. And oh, by the way, I'm showing up tonight. Who's with me? You know,
yep.
Roll call and boom, everybody's I'll be there. And they inspire each other and say, oh, yo, Dave, you used the 10 pounds last week. Why don't we go, you know, 15s? Ooh. You know what I mean? Let me go fit. Just saying. You know what I mean?
Just saying, man. Just saying.
There's a little bit of, you know, competition too sometimes, yep. But healthy competition. Right. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And that's the benefit of a group workout.
For sure.
If you're training by yourself with one person, sometimes you get used to each other, mm-hmm. you know, or you just follow a mundane routine.
Right.
And you need that little bit of inspiration. Yep. You know what I mean?
You're a father as well, right?
Yep.
What has been and now your son works with you.
Oh, it's awesome.
Right.
He's a monster.
What, I guess what, no, that's fine. What, do you think, I guess, him seeing you as he grew up in the habitual excellence, I'll call it. That's a good word right there. You know what I'm saying?
That's not bad. I'll give you.
But did he pick up on that, you know, like lifestyle? And then also like, how was the transition into working together? Because like at some point it doesn't become Kevin Pierre Lewis, who was just on our latest podcast. He made mention to like at some point it's no longer a father-son relationship. It's man to man. Right. So was it an easy transition to start working with your son?
Wow, I never really thought of that. You know, that's good. That's good stuff there, Dave. You know, another point right there.
I appreciate it. I'm racking them up, man. So then when you bust my ass in boot camp, I'm going to use this.
Can't wait.
Man, I asked really good questions, Butch. Come on.
But, you know, I think it was kind of a perfect storm, you know, when he was finishing up high school, ready to go into college, COVID hit. So he wasn't, you know, and he's not, you know, he needs to be interactive. And mm-hmm. he needs somebody to, you know, be on top of him to keep studying. He was a good student, you know, very attentive, very smart, you know. But if you leave him on his own, he'll wander, as most kids would, mm-hmm. right? You know? So I remember when COVID hit and he said, you know, Dad, you know, what are we going to do with the business? You know, I'm looking, you know, instead of going to college, maybe I'll work with you. And I said, you know, normally I would have said no. But since COVID was going on and everything was locked down, I said, you know what? We'll give it a year. Hopefully everything will be over that. And then we'll decide you go to college and you go from there. And then, you know, within that year, I said, let's see if you handle getting up early, dealing with the headaches of a business, you know, dealing with all the different personalities and employees and, mm-hmm. and the hustle and bustle of it all. And I got to say, he handled it great. He handled it with enthusiasm. He couldn't wait, you know. He came to a point where I would come home and Dad goes, oh, we got to talk about this and about that and about the other thing. And I was like, I just want to eat right now. You know, like he had so much enthusiasm, yep. So much enthusiasm, you know, and he's constantly learning and constantly studying, you know, and, you know, like we would talk about, you know, financials, about business. And he goes, you know, Dad, truth be told, I don't want to be a millionaire. And I'm like, well, that's okay. As long as you're successful. He goes, no, you're getting me wrong. I want to be a billionaire. Yeah, that's what I'm striving for. You know, so I was like, oh, okay. So he was like, billionaire is nothing. You know, this is what I want, you know? So, and he has that work ethic. He has, I think that's the something I got from my father. I think that's what he's gotten from me. You see me? Mm-hmm. He's got the nonstop work ethic. You know, it doesn't matter that it's Saturday night, he's working. Mm. You know, he's on the computer, he's learning, he's making up charts that he needs, you know, yep. He's calling people up. I haven't seen you, you know, what's going on? So to say that I'm proud of him is an understatement. I think, you know, and I want to get choked up here, but You know, like there's so many aspects that he makes me proud, you know, but I think the most one is when I say, that's my son. That's my proudest moment when I say, hey, Dave, that's my son. And I'm so proud, you know, because he's so smart. He's only 21. But if you talk to him, you would swear he's 21. No, he's like 30, 35. I mean, he's so smart. He's so intellect. He's so passionate. You know, he's so direct, you know, and he's a good man. He's a really good man. I'm very proud.
God bless. And yeah, that stuff it gets emotional quick.
Yeah, you know, it does.
It's one thing that weakens everybody. It doesn't matter how strong you are when it comes to kids, man. And I've always had a great relationship with my father, specific, as you know.
Yeah.
And then I'm sure him listening to this back, he's going to be very proud as well.
That with all that said, there are times that we butt heads.
Yeah, of course.
You know, and he comes in, and sometimes I say, all right, fine, whatever, try it.
Yep.
You know, and sometimes I have to let him try it and see that, oh, it didn't work. I said, well, I kind of told you that. But you didn't want to listen to me.
Right, you know what I mean?
But it's all good.
Yeah, of course. Good. But it also is it's a good time to be doing this, because I see, even with my dad, you know, like we're renting out a place in Stanford now, actually, right? And something that seems so difficult for my man to jump on Zillow and, you know, get this place rented out is something that's so easy for me in the use of technology.
Right.
So I'm saying, like, I'm sure your son brings so much to the table when it comes to his accessibility to technology. Would you agree with that?
Saturday, I picked up a new car. You know, and it has this huge dash, iPad on the dash, and all this nonsense. And I couldn't get the radio to work. I couldn't get the GPS to work. Yeah. I was like, Angelo, come in here. He's like, all right, Dad, I'll hook you up. You know,
You know what I mean? And it probably took him 2 seconds. Even if you don't know how to do it, all you do is you watch YouTube now. It takes you 3 seconds. And you're like, oh, start this, that, boom. And
right. And, you know, so he's my go-to guy. You know, there's a problem. Good. You know, we have the POS system. And, you know, I'll fix it on my phone, Dad. Don't worry about it.
Very cool. Okay.
Right, so, yeah, he brings a lot to the table.
That's awesome.
You know, I bring the experience, but he brings all the technology and, you know, a lot of passion.
You wrote a book.
I did.
Tell me about that a little bit.
I did.
It's one of my bucket list kind of things. I always wanted to write a book of some of, you know, I went back about, like, do I write about my, you know, my experiences? Do I write about, you know, about bodybuilding, you know, right? You know, and I kind of chose a little bit of everything, you know. I chose, you know, speak a little bit about my bodybuilding history, you know, but apply it to how would that benefit you in your fitness journey? You know, because like I said, what I'm really passionate about is not helping the bodybuilder. Like, you know, this is going to sound weird, but I think bodybuilding competitions are stupid. I think, well, let's see who has the better body. And it's really subjective, right? Who likes a black car? Who likes a white car? Who likes a big car? Who likes a little? It's the same thing in bodies, right? Who likes heavily muscled? Who likes more defined? You know, what is your size? So that's all subjective. So the guy who wins or the girl that wins is always based on the judges. And if they're always the same judges, the same people always win, right? So it depends on the area, you know? So it's kind of silly, you know what I mean? So what I'm passionate about is that, you know, I got this business person that came in, and he's pre-diabetic and he's hard to get up in the morning and he's struggling at his business and all that. But all of a sudden, you know, I got him in great shape. I cleared up his head and now he feels fantastic and he's becoming super successful in his business because he feels better, because he can do more, right? Because he feels better at the end of the day. When you don't feel good, you can't do good. When you feel good, you can do good.
What's the book called?
It's Train Hard, Train Smart, and have fun.
And where can
I'm gonna bring you a copy.
Yeah, please. Where can people pick that
book? You can pick it on Amazon.
Very cool.
Yeah, pick it up on Amazon. It was the number one selling book for about close to a year on Amazon. Yeah, pretty
cool.
That's
awesome. Yeah, I feel like I've seen the title before.
Yeah.
Now that you say that.
Yeah, it's a pretty good book. It has some, you know, some good stories, some, you know, crazy stories and stuff, you know. But it's a quick read. And I think once you read it, it gives you a lot of good tips and stuff to get in shape, you know, to help you along with your fitness journey. And you could use what resonates with you. Oh, I could use this and throw that away. You know what I mean? So, you know, everybody, like I said, the trainers are out there, always do what I say, nothing else, you know, and I just find that so wrong. You know, follow my diet, nothing else. Follow this keto diet or that diet, you know. Let me ask you a question. What do you think is the best diet in the world? The number one.
Well, for me or no?
No. Just what do you think in general, what's the best diet in the world?
I would say high protein. And very general, right? High protein, low carb, moderate fat.
Right. So there's a guy out there named Stan Efferdine, which I like a lot. They call him the Rhino. He's a, you know, full-time bodybuilder and stuff. But what he says, I thought was brilliant. What he says, the best diet in the world is the one you can stick to.
Yeah, 100%.
That's it.
Well, so for me, like with the Crohn's, and it's ironic that I, you know, can keep the, I guess, the size and energy, because typical thought is like, oh, you really got to be high in your carbs. Some of these bodybuilders are 500 grams of carbs a day. To me, I can't have carbs. I can have them on the weekends and here and there, and I'm in remission with the Crohn's disease, but carbs are a real trigger for a flare-up, right? So, like, for me, what works is a really high-protein diet, and I have to eat, like, a lot of cooked vegetables. And then from there, like, I'll have, you know, some fats and stuff here and there, but that really works for me, and I enjoy it, though. Doesn't matter where I am at any sort of restaurant. If I go, and it depends if I'm trying to spend the money or not. But my go-to meal is...
I've seen you eat, buddy.
My go-to meal, it would always be a steak. Mm-hmm. Like, always would be a steak.
Protein.
But I'd love it. You know what I mean? Like, so it's something that I can actually stick to. And now my daughter, she's 3 years old. You ask her what she wants for dinner, and she's going to tell you steak and salad. Yeah. But it's also because of what she sees. Yeah. But then we go to McDonald's, too, and she...
Hey, my son used to munch on broccoli when he was younger. I used to munch on broccoli. So I start with most of my clients. I always tell them, listen, I think everybody should start the 80-20 rule, you know, and that means 80% of the time you eat really clean. And then 20% of the time you eat what you want to eat because you want to live, you want to be okay, you know. Also, you know, there's that status, everybody has to have a six pack and all that. It's not necessarily true. It depends on what you want. Again,
I got three and I look good. Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't have to have six, Abir. I got three or four
sometimes.
It all depends.
But I often tell a lot of my clients, listen, those extra 10 pounds that you're holding or extra 5 pounds you're holding is the birthday cake that you had with your son. Right?
Enjoyment.
It's
memories.
It's the wedding that you shared with your best friend. Those are important things, and you got to balance that out.
Right.
Because there's, you know, when I look back at my bodybuilding career, I sacrificed a lot of that, and some of those I regret. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, you know, was it really worth it? I wasn't so sure. You know what I mean? But, you know, again, it comes down to what your goals and what's important to you.
Right.
You know, it's very individual.
I want to pick your brain on something for myself.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, get nervous.
Give it up, kid.
TRT, known as testosterone replacement therapy. I've been doing a lot of research on like biohacking, anti-aging stuff. And I know you're not a doctor, but obviously I'm picking your personal experience here. Is it something that's safe? And do you think that monitored by a doctor, and for those who may not know what testosterone replacement therapy is basically a doctor prescribes this testosterone, and correct me if I'm wrong, at a very low dose to bring you back to your optimal levels if your testosterone is a bit low. Is that accurate?
Absolutely.
Right?
And I absolutely agree with it. I think it's a great thing that most men over 40 should get their testosterone checked, see exactly what the levels are, and then from there, talk to a doctor and get a prescription, you know, if you need to get an... I also feel, I know they have the creams, suppository.
Is that real? Like, can I really put cream on my body and my testosterone?
Some people advocate that. I don't think that's the best form. Right, I think the injectable is probably the safer form.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it's more direct and it'll get into your bloodstream what you need, you know? But I also think that when you start taking that TRT, that you should make sure that your eating is good. Make sure it's clean. Mm-hmm. The number one drug in the world is food. Right? The food is the most important thing that you could put into your body. Mm. So a lot of people try to compensate that with medicines and all that.
Yep.
You got to eat the right foods. You got to eat the healthy foods. You got to have the dietary proteins. You got to have your fiber and the right amount of fats and carbs into your system. You got to figure that out for what's good for you, again, and also for your goals. But if you're going to take TRT and eat like shit, you're going to be in trouble.
Right.
Right? It's going to affect your cholesterol. It's going to have a lot of adverse reactions. You could retain a lot more water. You know, there could be a lot of bad side effects.
Yeah.
So you have to go on a full program.
Right.
You know? And it's not like it's mad. Like, you have to eat perfect all the time.
No, of course.
But, again, 80% of your food should be quality food.
Right. It's funny because, you know, I've been listening to these high-level doctors, Gary Brecka and these guys who are, you know, their clients are Dana White. Like, you know, big.
Yeah, but there's
big,
a lot of controversy with him as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm not, you know, not, I really don't want to get into it. I don't care. Yeah. But I'm saying on Gary Brecka's work specifically, he's basically like, listen, every man, you know, you want the natural hormone to be in your body.
Absolutely.
So, you know, and I'm so curious about it because I see so many people, even in their 30s, 40s, 50s, that just are so lethargic all day long. And I know, like, it's predominantly their lifestyle habits and what they eat and stuff like that. But I've even talked to a couple close friends of mine who I know are like just overweight and kind of not really at their best. Mm-hmm. And I tell them about this TRT and they've been looking into it.
I think it's a great go-to as long as the rest of your life.
You got to align it.
You can't just think that's a fix-all, end-all.
Right.
You know, it's not like people are like, oh, I had a protein shake. Did you work out? Did you eat healthy throughout the day? You know, you know, we have like, there's a few steps that we tell everybody, like, you know, you should always be drinking your water, right? Drink plenty of water. You know, should you drink a gallon? You know, close to it. If you're hard training, you're sweating a lot. Yeah. A gallon of water should be, you know, you should be having, you know, if you, you should be getting, you know, 6-7 if you can, 8 hours of sleep a night. You know, those are...
That's probably the most important.
Yeah, that's the most important. Recovery, right? We talked about recovery. Recovery is essential. Without that, nothing's going to work.
Right.
You know, that's when you grow. That's when you lose the weight. Everything happens when you sleep. If you're not sleeping, nothing's going to happen.
Right.
You know? So, you know, if depending on... You know, you should know what your calorie count is. Like I tell a lot of my clients too, at least for the first couple of weeks, track your calories.
I got to get better with that. I used to do it a lot, and now I don't do it at all.
Yeah, there's so many different... I like... writing it into a book. You know, I'm old school, obviously, you know, but I think there's a mind to hand connection. When you write it, you remember it better and it sticks with you a little bit stronger. But there's so many apps that you can use.
You can
to
be
track
like,
it.
I ate 5 ounces of chicken,
you know,
AI just computes it right away.
Right. Yeah.
Seconds.
So yeah, you want to, you know, you want to write it down. You want to log in. It becomes like a diary. So you could look at it and say, oh, I felt really good this day. I didn't feel good this day. Oh, I'm feeling more energetic, or I gain weight or lose weight. I also think that you should weigh yourself periodically, you know, at least once a week at the very minimum, you know. And a lot of people are like, oh, that's messes with your brain, and, you know, put up your big girl panties and be quiet. You got to know the numbers. You should know the numbers, just like your bank account. Do you know how much is in your bank account? You know, if you never look at it, you don't know what you're doing. You know what I mean? So
it's an avoidance that people.
Yeah. Right? You know,
but that's strategic on their part.
You got to hit it head on. You know what I mean? So I think that's really, really, really important. So there's a couple simple steps that you can do to really help you start your journey to get a little bit healthy and a little bit stronger. Because at the end of the day, if you know, you could be living, but what's the quality of your life?
Right.
You know, if you can't get off the couch, if you can't enjoy your children, you know, and the same thing, your bad habits are leading to your children, right? Like we said, right? Yep. If your girls are always watching you drink bad and eat bad, that's what they're going to start doing. And they're going to have the same problems as an adult as you have.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. My daughter did pick up a bottle of Tito's and she was like, look, daddy, I'm drinking juice. Full disclosure. This episode is sponsored by Light Crafters, your professional Christmas light installers. Are you tired of spending countless hours untangling Christmas lights, climbing ladders, and struggling to create that perfect holiday ambiance? Look no further. Light Crafters is here to transform your home into a winter wonderland with their professional Christmas light installation services. At Light Crafters, they understand the importance of creating a magical atmosphere during the holiday season. Their team of skilled and experienced installers are dedicated to bringing your vision to life, ensuring that your home stands out as the epitome of festive cheer. Why choose Light Crafters? Here's what sets them apart. Expertise. Their team consists of highly trained professionals who have mastered the art of Christmas light installation. With years of experience under their belts, they know the best techniques and have an eye for detail, guaranteeing a flawless display every time. Customization. They believe that every home is unique, and your Christmas light display should reflect your personal style. Their designers will work closely with you to understand your preferences and create a customized plan that perfectly complements your home's architecture and landscape. A hassle-free experience. Say goodbye to the stress and frustration of dealing with tangled lights and malfunctioning bulbs. Light Crafters takes care of everything, from design and installation to maintenance and takedown. Sit back, relax, and let them handle the hard work while you enjoy the magic of the season. This Christmas, let Light Crafters be your go-to professional Christmas light installers. Contact them today to schedule a consultation and let the team bring your holiday dreams to life. You can find them on Instagram at LightCraftersNY. Don't forget to tell them that you're a friend of the No Snooze podcast. Now, back to the epi. So since 99, I read that you studied Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, right?
Mm-hmm.
Under, and this is impressive, world-renowned fighting champion, Master Relson Gracie.
Helson Gracie.
Why am I thinking of the father, though? That was Grandmaster. Helio.
That was his father. Okay. He calls him Daddy. That's Daddy. Yeah, he always says, that's Daddy.
Okay, so that's Grandmaster, right?
Yeah.
And then just for people to give context to, that name is who pioneered the
UFC.
Right. Yeah. And that's a very prominent figure in the jiu-jitsu world.
He trained Hoist Gracie for the UFC fights.
Right. Yeah. And then I guess from my understanding of Gracie, is it more structured based off of everyday, like how you would act in a street fight versus Brazilian jiu-jitsu? What's the difference?
Well, Brazilian jiu-jitsu technically is a self-defense art. Mm-hmm. It's designed for the little guy to beat up the big guy. You know, that's
David versus the Goliath.
Exactly.
Slingshot him right to the head. There's
Helio was
reference.
A very small statured, thin little guy, and he was able to compensate with his jiu-jitsu and be able to defend himself or fight with the bigger, stronger guys.
How'd you link up with these guys?
Well, it was funny. I mean, after 1999, when I stopped competing, I wanted to do something. And I liked the UFC. You know, by that time, I'm in my 40s already. So mm-hmm. I'm like, well, I don't know if the UFC is for me right now. But I also didn't have much of a martial arts background. I did kickboxing, when I was in my teens, nothing really to speak of, But I saw a flyer on a pole one day in the Bronx. And I said, oh, so me and my buddy went to go check it out. And it was
Pound Cake?
No, it was my other friend, Aaron, who was just at the time just as big as me. But I'll tell you a quick story. I went, Mike Casey was running the school at the time, right? Helson Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, yes. Right? So he was running the school at the time. I walk in there and he's like, he looks at me up and down. He looks at my buddy. You know, we're both pretty big, beefy guys, I had just finished the universe. So I was really at my largest at that point. So I walked in, I was probably around 250 or so, still pretty lean.
Huge.
I was pretty big, and really strong. So I walk in there. He goes, so you guys want to learn? And he goes, yeah, I want to see if this could do anything, that kind of stuff. And we both, my friend Aaron was already a brown belt in other styles of jiu-jitsu and other styles of martial arts. So he was pretty confident. So they matches up with some regular guys. We went to a couple little practice moves. And he says, all right, so we're going to do a couple drills, this guy's going to get mounted on top of you and just push him off, get him off you, and he's going to try to submit you, make you tap out, So I was like, all right. And he told me how to tap. I didn't know anything about a tap. Right. So the guy was about 150 pounds, 145 pounds, I'm like, I'm going to send this kid to the moon, I'm going to crush this kid, So he gets on to me and he looked like Howdy Doody, red hair, freckles in the face. And he's like, hey, how you doing, So I was like, all right, I'll try not to hurt you. He goes, oh, thanks, He was really nice guy, real sweet guy. Gets on top of me and oh my God, he was like an anaconda. I could not get him off me for all I tried. And all I learned was all of a sudden I'm in an arm bar. I'm tapping. And he's strangling me. I'm tapping. I'm like, every three, like 2 minutes, I'm tapping.
That's a long time.
I look at my friend. I look at my friend Aaron. I'm like, how you doing? He goes, I'm tapping more than you. We got our butts kicked.
Yeah.
And at one point he says, all right, just do whatever you want to do. You want to punch him. You want to kick him. Whatever you want to do. This kid kicked, and then the worst part of it, he had a twin brother. He walked over and he kicked my ass too. He kicked my ass. I was like, oh my goodness.
Hilarious.
So I was so frustrated, but I really wanted to learn. Like I wasn't going to take it like my ego was killed. I went home. I wanted to play paddleball against the curb. I was like, oh my goodness. I was so defeated. But I came back and I kept going. And I kept learning and I kept learning. Then I remember about, 7-8 months later, those kids were back into the jiu-jitsu school. And I was like, hi, remember me? But now I knew a lot more jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
I knew the base. I knew what not to do. And of course, he didn't have my strength. So with that, we sparred and we were even.
Wow.
which is astounding about that was that, you know, he's been doing it about a year or 2 years more than I am, but he's 145 pounds. Mm-hmm. I'm 245 pounds and I still couldn't beat him. At least I didn't get killed.
Right.
But we were like, we both, you know, okay, we're pretty,
we shook hands.
Oh, that was a good match, but I didn't win and he didn't win, but he's still 145 pounds.
That's
I was like, oh my God, I still couldn't do anything to this kid. You know, and I was so frustrated.
Yeah.
I wanted to just like grab his face and like, you know? But it was amazing. So I got hooked with that.
Yeah.
I got totally hooked. And then, you know, I met Helson himself and it was a great thing. And he took a lot of interest in me because he said, man, a guy like you could really do well. And he started training me and helping me. And it was an interesting ride. But that's also what kind of helped me with a lot of injuries, though, because I was still training pretty heavy in the weight room.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would go and we would spar. Well, every night we would spar.
Flexibility was great, right?
You know, the flexibility was okay. It was,
but that opens you up a lot.
Yeah, it helped me a lot. But, you know, it was that recovery part, man. I wasn't letting my body recover.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm well into my 40s at this point. So the injuries started coming. You know, when I hit 50, it was surgery after surgery.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean? But the good thing, again, about jiu-jitsu is that it's all about leverage. It's not really about strength. You know what I mean? So if you apply your strength, it's a bonus, but you don't need to. And that was the hardest thing I had to learn, was not to use my strength, because that also gassed me out.
Right?
And I get tired right away.
Good point.
So I made sure I couldn't do that. Once I started learning that and learning how to stabilize myself a little better, mm-hmm. then I got, as they say, a little more dangerous on the mat, mm-hmm. you know, and it was wonderful, but I loved it. I thought it was a great journey. I think everybody should learn how to defend themselves. It also gives you an air of confidence, you know, that I think the bad guys kind of sense that, like when you stand there and like, I don't know, this is a guy that I'm not going to mess with, because you just have that confidence.
Right.
And you know, like, you know, I don't want to fight, but I can. You know, and then all of a sudden they're like, okay, maybe we shouldn't mess with you. I'm like, yeah, I don't think it's a good idea.
I was listening to Rogan, right? And Rogan...
He's a black belt.
Most people, I think they would know by now, but he's an incredible fighter.
Yeah.
Right. So somebody was asking, it was actually The Rock, they were going back and forth. And basically Rogan was saying how, like, you know, he really just doesn't want to fight anybody, because if he fights somebody, like, the only thing he really knows how to do is put a kick to the, you know, right in between your nose. And then he's like, but that's a problem, because then I'm going to get shot. Right. So he's like, you know, the most humble guy in the world, but he always prays. He's like, I've never been in a street fight. And he's like, even though I know how to fight, my goal is to never fight, because he can really do damage to people. And then he thinks that somebody's going to come back with a gun and kill him. And it's true. Right. But nowadays, people are just stupid.
Well, what's the saying goes, you're better off being, I'd rather be a warrior in a gardener in a garden than a gardener in a war.
Oh, wow.
Right.
I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what's really important at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, knowing that you can take care of yourself.
Yep.
But the flip side, you can't take care of yourself. Now you're in a situation that you can't handle.
Mm.
You know, you can't protect your daughter. You can't protect your friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have that presence. I mean, even besides being a bigger, stronger guy. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Any, I struggle with people who say, and if you say this, that's fine, but just be honest here, you know, that they have no regrets in life. Because me, I'm 34 years old and I got 100,000 regrets already. And I know people don't like to look back, but is there something that, like, you regret thus far?
Oh, absolutely. I'm with you. I think there's a lot of, you haven't lived life if you have no regrets.
Right.
I'm sorry. You know, like, even my business journey, everybody like, oh, you had it so planned out. You've done so well. I was like, I had no idea what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every year was something new. Okay, let's develop. I started with a hardcore bodybuilding gym. Now I'm in a fitness studio doing boot camps and personal training. It all develops. Like, what's working, what's not working, what do you feel passionate about? You know, that kind of thing,
right.
You know? So there's no structure. There's not like a said movie that you were playing. You know,
mm-hmm.
you have no idea how the end is. And there's quite a bit of regrets. I think the one regret that I have, that's something that we were just talking about, was that once I stopped my bodybuilding career in 1999, I kept training really heavy, because it's kind of the only thing I knew, right? It was just instinct. Go in the gym, you just keep on adding the plates. You know, we used to go onto the leg press and we would go up 200 pounds at a time. 200 pounds, because we had 100 pound plates. So we go 200, boom, just keep going. Well over 1,000 pounds, you know, just keep going, you know? And I was doing that throughout my entire, you know, after I finished bodybuilding and now I'm training jujitsu and we're doing leg locks and slams and flips and all these kind of things, you know, and now I'm going to the gym and training. And I think that really battered my body. Like it was just too much. The two were not a good marriage. Mm. It was not a good marriage between the heavy training and the jujitsu. And I regret that a lot because I think that's where a lot of my injuries came from, trying to do both of them simultaneously. Mm-hmm. I should have backed off my training, did more functional training, you know, and I think that would have been better. I think I would have been better off today and healthier today because there's certain things that I can't do. I can't run, you know, I have no hamstring on my left leg. Mm-hmm. You know, that was torn off completely. You know, I have very low mobility in my lower back now, you know, so, and this, you know, like if I want to play basketball with my son, it'd be almost impossible. Right, I can't do that. So that's a big regret.
You got a lot of trophies and belts to
I have all that.
That's,
but, you know,
that's a good thing.
Yeah, that's all great and done. But, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, we all live a lot longer nowadays, you know, mm-hmm. and you want to have that quality of life and you want to enjoy things, you know. Trophies as they are, they become dust collectors. You know, they really do. They're great memories, and don't get me wrong. And I enjoyed it. And, you know, if I would had a chance to repeat it, I probably would have changed a few things, especially the severe, heavy training, you know. So
nice. To somebody who has made the conscious decision that they want to improve their life from a wellness, fitness standpoint, what's your message to that person?
Get around the right people. Follow the right people. And don't listen to anybody who hasn't done
anything. They haven't done anything yet.
Right.
So they've only committed in their head that they're going to do something. So you're saying...
Either what it is, get around the right people. Either no matter what it is, get around the right people. If you're around the wrong crowd, or people who just want to work for the weekend and get drunk on the weekend, or just watch, you know, Netflix all day, that's what you're going to be doing.
Yep.
You know, that's the vocabulary. You know, so we don't want to do that. I give you another quick story. Went out to breakfast with my son. One day with a bunch of people, and the conversation turned to Netflix, and they talked about Netflix. You know. And it was an hour from there. That afternoon, we had dinner plans with my attorney at the time, who was a good friend of mine, you know? And we went to his home. And he has a multi-million dollar home and all that. So Mangelo and I, we walk in there. And the first thing that my friend says to my son is like, so what kind of a franchise are we going to build? You know, how many gyms do you think you want before we pick this number? And that was the conversation. And my son looked at me and goes, wow, the conversations are different, Dad. He said, depends on who you're around.
Mm.
And he enjoyed that conversation.
Right, of course.
And both people are great.
Of course.
But if you want to improve your life, if you want to look forward in your life, you got to be around the right people.
Mm.
You know, that's why you know my buddy Nick. I love Nick to death because, you know, he was a client of mine and we just bonded and we, you know, he's a great friend. He's the guy that tells me straight up, you know, like, hey, you've been sitting on your ass for a while. What are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he has no fear about telling me, you know, and he'll tell me straight out, you've been messing up. You're not doing anything. I called you the other night. You were on the couch drinking beer. What the hell is that? You know? And I was like, oh, okay. You know, and that's what you want. You want to be around the right people and the people that keep you accountable, you know, and tell you the truth. Don't look
great
to get
message.
Smoke blowing up your ass.
Yeah, great message. Before we close out here, where can people find you? Instagram, the gyms, whatever you want to share to the people.
My people. We have two gyms, one in the Bronx, Mr. America's Training Camp in the Bronx, 3229 East Tremont, Bronx, New York, 10461. And then we have Hawthorne, New York. It's called the Hit Room. We're going to be franchising that. John, you're going to open up your own franchise. I know that.
I like that.
So, yeah, he's definitely going to probably open up five of them. That's what you committed to, right?
Wow, I like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're putting this in the books?
Yeah, right, yeah, let's put it in the books. We're going to open up five of those fitness franchises. And it's 168 Old Saw Mill River Road.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find me on Facebook as Butch Nieves. You can find me on Instagram, Butch Nieves. Also as Mr. America's Training Camp and Hit Room, Facebook, Instagram. Either one.
Butch, I thank you, man.
David, you're the man.
No, seriously. Yeah. You know, your credentials are incredible, but you know, getting to know you as a man is even better. Happy to call you a friend. I think you have a lot of knowledge behind you, but you're also very, very passionate about what you do. And we share a lot of the same, beliefs when it comes to health and wellness. Looking forward to, to some things in the future. And really, thank That's you great. For coming on.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
All right.
Give me that hand.
Guys, as always, we thank you for your incredible support, whether you listen to one or 165 with Butch, Mr. America Nieves. You can shop the latest merch at nosnoozeshop.com. Happy holidays to all of you guys. And as always, until next time.
This looks good, man.
Stop snoozing.
Get up and get after it.
Look at my man Butch. I love it, baby. No snooze, right?
No snooze. That's it.
Thank you guys for tuning in. That's another epi in the books. You can follow us on Instagram at No Snooze Podcast and leave us a 5-star review wherever you listen to us. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, No Snooze. Shop the latest merch at nosnoozeshop.com. Come on.